So, good evening, everyone. I think it's been 2 weeks since I was here, right? Because 2 weeks ago I was in Lisbon, right? And then last week I was doing something else. So, nice to be back. It's very hot here in Paris. And I don't know where you are, if it's very hot as well, too. I think where Marjolaine is, it's hot. I don't know about Lisbon, but in the time since we last, since I was last here, it's like well, if a few days ago, David Hockney, the painter David Hockney, died, and I've been thinking a lot about him. I became enamored with his work 2 years ago. I think I had seen a lot of his work before, but I saw an exhibition in Normandy that he did. It was of the works that he had done in Normandy during the pandemic, because that's where he was living. And then last year, saw a fabulous retrospective in Paris at the Fondation Vuitton. And I actually went twice because I was so enamored with it. Anyway, he died, I think, on Friday. And so I've been thinking a lot about him, and specifically about he challenged the perspective, the way that Western art uses perspective, and did great a huge study about Chinese scrolls and how in Asian art the notion of perspective is completely different. And had a very controversial book that he wrote about this, that a lot of people, you know, a lot of specialists challenged his perspective, but he didn't care. And I'm fascinated by this notion of perspective, because in the Chinese scrolls, everyone everywhere all at once is presented in the scrolls, you know. And he was fascinated by this, and he started doing this in his own work. And he used like this thing what do you call it? Collage of, he would take pictures of the same scene over and over and over and over and over again, and then use little bits, but like Polaroids, you know. So, and he would piece them together, but from different times at different moments of the same scene. And it was this really fascinating way of trying to give a different perspective. Which he acknowledged was also very Taoist, that there's this harmony of nature, and that the human is not the center, the human view is not the center, that you can't really, if you set yourself apart, you can't, we know this from our practice, if you separate yourself, then you can't truly experience whatever it is. Whatever the moment is. Anyway, I was thinking a lot about this. And then 2 days ago was Bloomsday, which is the great day of James Joyce's Ulysses, which is also in keeping with this notion of time and space. It's the entire 700 pages of the story take place in one day. Specific day, June 16th, 1904, in Dublin. And as many of you know, I did a lot of work around this, and in the same way that that Hockney did, Joyce said that in Ulysses he said that he had seen life clearly, in the very precise, ordinary details of one person's day in one city and very specific characters. But by doing so, he saw the whole. And he made no one special. His main characters are no one special. But that means everyone is special. And that it's any day in any life, anywhere, can be Bloomsday. Every day is Bloomsday in that sense, right? So I was thinking about these two things. And then on Bloomsday, a great Buddhist scholar, Robert Thurman, died. Robert Thurman, who is the father of the actress Uma Thurman, but he also was the first Westerner to be ordained as a monk in the Tibetan Gelupa tradition. He was actually ordained by the Dalai Lama in like 1960 or 61, something like that. And then not, if he'd stayed there for a couple of years, but then he was encouraged by his teachers to go back home, to leave India, go back home and live an ordinary life. And that would be the way for him to practice and transmit. So he went back to university. He had dropped out of university, went back to university, got a doctorate in, Sanskrit and Indian studies or something, Buddhist studies, and became a professor at Columbia in New York City, and was one of the great names of Buddhist thought in certainly in the United States, but everywhere. And he created, with Richard Gere and Philip Glass, he created this thing called Tibet House in New York, which was is kind of like a Tibetan culture and, a site of the Tibetans in exile or something in New York. So he's fascinating. And his teachings were, he tried to really simplify it and make it accessible to Westerners because that's who he was talking to. And he was a father. He was a university professor. He had other children. I think he had four children. Uma is the only famous one, apparently. I don't know what the others do, but I'm sure they're equally successful in whatever they do. And he basically tried to tell people that, to really make it simple, that Nirvana is not some unattainable thing. It's just to be free from suffering, which is what the Buddha's message was. But then the question is, well, what is suffering and what is it to be free from suffering? And he said basically, enlightenment is to have a perfect experience, knowledge of the nature of reality, which is that it's to see reality as a selfless interwovenness, which is what Joyce did with Ulysses. It's a book about that as well, about enlightenment and nirvana, just here and now in everyday life. And in a sense, this is what Hockney, with his just this absolute immense love for the world, this just His work just reflects this happiness to just be, nothing special. A love for nature. He did lots of landscapes, especially in his later years, and all the Normandy paintings, which he did on iPads for the most part, not only, but he did with iPads. And so he was, fascinated with and steeped in this love of the world that he put onto the paint, onto the canvas, was just this overflowing creativity. And Robert Thurman, this is what he basically said, the enlightenment is this wisdom of that when you have this knowledge of the nature of reality, then we call that wisdom, impermanence, selfless interconnection, right? And from that then arises very naturally love and compassion. And Ulysses is a story of that too, the main character. The story turns on throughout the whole book, the main character is embodying compassion and love, but there's a key moment when it turns and he really is the bodhisattva in that moment. But so for Thurman, it was that you awaken by being all, being everyone, being no one and being everyone, experiencing the 10,000 things. Wherever you are, whoever you are. And Hockney tried to do this. He tried to, he was inspired by this, the Chinese and the Japanese, all encompassing everything everywhere all at once in their scrolls, right? And so this has been sitting with me, or I've been sitting with this since Friday. And it so happens that our text in the study group talks about this notion of continuous practice, which is also that, it's circular. There's no one perspective. And so that's been appropriate too. That's not why I picked that text. I picked that text before Hockney died. Before Thurman died, before Bloomsday. So, but it's the truth of my understanding of the nature of being. So that's why I picked it, something like that. So then what does that mean in our everyday life? The landscape for Hockney or for the Chinese scroll painters is, or for us as embodying in the world, we are a vessel through which this basic nature of reality is expressed in this very particular way. So whatever we do is it. Wherever we are, whoever we are, Dublin, Paris, Lisbon, Pont de Barre, London, wherever we are, whoever we are just a vessel expressing it. And there's really nothing else that we need to realize. Of course, that's already a big program to realize that, yesterday I had this meeting on Zoom with that had to do with well, it's a university project that, and I'm not a scholar by any means, an academic, but it's from Hervé, who some of you know from the study group, and one of his colleagues in India, who are trying to do some project about the capacity of meditative practice to change people's lives, something like that. So they have this whole thing, like very academic stuff, and they wanted to talk to me to see what I thought and to just hear what I had to say. And it was really interesting because everything that they were saying in their like academic jargon, could be said in a completely another different way. So I was saying it in a completely different way. So this also is this thing of perspective, right? So the words are just vehicles that are expressing the basic nature of reality or something, or awakening. And it was quite fascinating, actually. And it comes down to this. I think I had this mentioned this in a talk not so long ago about the Buddha's single teaching. He called it his single teaching, which was nothing whatsoever should be clung to as I or mine. Or Yasutani, nothing is worth holding on to. And as the Buddha said, that's the single teaching, because if you've heard that teaching, you've heard all teaching. If you've realized that teaching, you've realized all. And if you practice that teaching, you practice all, which is the same thing as Ulysses Joyce is doing, which what the Hockney does, what the Chinese scrolls do, which is really the essence of our practice. There's nothing else. That's the only teaching in our practice, really. And so, as the title of the book that we have, that the excerpt in study group is from, is "You Have to Say Something." And we have to say something, but what we say is not it. It's just a word, whatever we say. It's not really it, but yet we can express this immense love of life, of being. We can express this basic nature. This, Joyce took, he brought with his with Ulysses, he brought this reverence to everyday life. He made the profane sacred, which some people, that was considered obscene when it first tried to be published in the US. Not only for that notion, but that was really considered obscene, that, also there's some sexual stuff in it, but basically it was because it was just outrageous that you could elevate the profane, this everyday existence, to being sacred, to being honored, and yet that's what we do with our practice, that our practice is that. Or another exhibit that I saw recently was the photographer Nan Golden, who elevates also, it's fascinating because all these things, she does these slideshows, and it's all her friends and people she knew. A lot of them, unfortunately, died from AIDS, a lot of them. But they were not like sacred subjects of her photos, and yet they are extremely sacred, and they really, there is this deep expression of love and loss in her work, that it's really hard to explain because there's nothing special there, and yet it's just so beautiful the way that it's done, and that's what our practice is about. Nothing special, no, nothing special. For those of you who have been to Deschenes Schölling, I ran into Herb Elsky in the street in front of my house. Do you remember Herb, Debbie, and Lisa? And he's this guy who's from the Tibetan place, the Shambhala place, where we did a retreat, where I've done many retreats, but where we did one recently, a couple of years ago. And it was quite just so extraordinary. On the one hand, it wasn't, because he was next door with Catherine, his wife, because she was leading some sort of retreat there. On the other hand, it was just this like completely random thing that they should be walking out of that house when I'm coming up the other street from the other way. Just this like extraordinary moment. And yet completely ordinary. He doesn't live anywhere near. He doesn't live in Paris. He lives way out in the country. I've never seen him anywhere except there. I've seen him on the screen on Zoom, but other than that, no. And those moments happen all the time. Everything, everywhere, all at once. And sometimes it's so after that happened, after that, I was like, wow, if I had stayed at the shop, if someone had been ahead of me in line at the shop, I wouldn't have seen them. Or if I had been ahead of someone else in line at the shop, I would have come home sooner. Or if I had, hesitated about which apples to buy, or if I had, done something else before I went to the shop, I wouldn't have seen them. And yet it's all at once. Everything, everywhere, all at once. Had I not seen them, that also would have been an extraordinary moment. Every moment is extraordinary. And just this immense love that we can feel when we've experienced that. Just this over, and it's not necessarily so the beauty can be also, the plants outside in my garden suffering because it's hot. Or the hibiscus plant that we had inside in our house, but we put outside and it has now died. Or it's dying, or maybe it's, renewing because there are some tiny little buds that are coming. So who knows? That's just this. There's so much love there, and even in the loss, there's something just, somewhere, someone just today or yesterday or something, I don't forget where it was, someone said something about, can we appreciate just the incredible miracle that we are here, that this is where we are, and then if you have like, so I remember somebody asked Robert Thurman, after, so it was after Trump's first term, but before his second term. And someone asked him, because he's a Tibetan and all this, and said, so what was Donald Trump's previous life? What was he in a previous lifetime? And he took the question seriously, and he said, well, he must have had quite a good, in many aspects, life to have become reincarnated as a human. That's like the best you can be, apparently. And he must have been, because he was born into wealth, he must have been incredibly generous in a previous lifetime. However, then he went on to say that, there were probably other shadows in that previous lifetime, and that he had recently read the book by Trump's niece, who does not like Trump at all, and who is like the person in the family that has knows him well, and she's a psychiatrist, so she's trained, she knows about the human mind, and Thurman points this out, and so he said he gained great insight into what Trump's childhood had been like. And that it was terrible. And that his father was a was an American Nazi, actually. He was at there was this famous Nazi gathering in the 30s in New York, and his father was there, was present there. It's public knowledge. And that his mother was very unstable and psychologically, and so was not really so present. And the father berated the children and encouraged Trump to be a bully and all this. And Thurman said, I had a lot of compassion for him from through reading this book. He said, I could have been him, because he also grew up in New York, Thurman. Thurman grew up in kind of like a Upper East Side classy New York family. But it was New York. Thurman's a little bit older, but not much. And he said, I could have been him. I could have known him in New York when we were growing up. And he said that really hit him, that he felt really compassionate for this Trump, who the rest of us are saying he's this horrible person, whatever. And can we see this? We're always saying this. Well, if you see that someone is mistreating someone else, you know that they're suffering, that we wouldn't treat people like that if we weren't hurting ourselves. If we saw the interconnection, if we saw the oneness, we saw the selfless interweaving, then we would not mistreat others. And that, oddly enough, I mean, no, maybe not oddly enough, it was interesting that Thurman would say that. And I remember being surprised at the time that he had said that, but I understand. Because he does have an understanding of an experience of the selfless interconnection and the knowledge of the nature, basic nature of reality. I don't remember what else he said about his previous existence, but I remember that struck me, that he said, if he is wealthy now, if he was born into wealth, that means that he was generous in a previous lifetime. It doesn't explain all his grasping and all that, but there's probably other stuff that does. I don't know. So that's in all of this, it's really that there's nothing other than this to realize. It's really just this, just this. I will stop there, and if anyone likes to question, share, comment, everything everywhere all at once is okay.
Thank you, Roshi. One for the news about Thurman. I didn't know that he had died. And this guy has off and on, I don't know why. He came up probably by accident first, and then I started going back. He is everything I've ever heard him say, and he goes quite deeply into all kinds of different practices online in different places. He is fabulously interesting, this guy. There are a lot of people that talk about a lot of things where I think, oh, I could say that, but not Robert Thurman. This guy knows everything about everything. I'm sure he spoke several of the different languages that he came across, but it's not just that. And he spoke with such, wasn't even authority, but with personal experience, I think is what marked it so much. He wasn't trying to show off what he knew. He was trying to explain what he had experienced. And it's fabulously interesting. I feel feel kind of sad. I'm gonna miss him. He's, and I also wanted to mention, because I was, my David Hockney were those swimming pool paintings, which I quite frankly am not crazy about. They kind of spook me out. Joa mentioned that he had died the other day, the other evening, no, the other day. And so I thought, well, maybe I should do a little bit better than just stay fixated on that. And there's a very good documentary on Ate that she, about him. And effectivement, these wonderful paintings of Normandy, and and also somewhere in England where you can follow the road. You can actually, I mean, you can start at the beginning of the painting and follow the road down valleys and everything. Yeah, and his attitude about it, of sort of, let me take you into this present moment with me, sort of thing. And his, I mean, he wasn't a young man. He's out in the crappy weather and with kind of storm gear on and painting and taking pictures and stuff. Yeah, I didn't realize, because the swimming pool paintings to me seem very deadly, but he wasn't deadly at all. I mean, the person that's in that documentary was, au contraire, he was like really into the fibrousness of life. It was lovely to discover. I didn't know that about him. For French-speaking people, some of the commentary, what happens to French people when they comment on paintings? They turn into this, in my opinion, this sort of verbal soup that is more about them than about the paintings. Let's put it that way. So, oh, and you're running into Herb. This is actually, it's happened a couple of times to me this week, and my crazy girlfriend in Washington State, who is into astrology and she reads cards and everything, when I wrote and told her I was having these, I call these experiences run inability, because you meet the person, okay, first of all, they're there, but if, as you say, if you turned your head, if you'd been 4 minutes later or earlier, it's not happening. There's something so miraculous about it. And when I'm in a good groove, I've had a couple recently, and so I wrote to my crazy girlfriend and said, I'm having a lot of run-in abilities. She always makes, she's nuts, but she makes these pronouncements. Well, quite normal, because I don't know, some Venus is in Cyrus or something. Run-in ability is very prevalent right now. So that may be why you ran into Herb. But I assume that it's that same feeling. It's like being in the middle of a miracle, really. And then I had this with a student of mine, the only student I ever smacked in the face, I ran into in Marseille, in Saint-Denis, in Paris. As a matter of fact, I thought I was going to run into him in the States. He kept popping up in my life. And in the first moment, it's like, wow, how can this happen? And 2 minutes later, it seems completely normal for some reason. At least that's my experience of it. So, like, we just start talking again as if we hadn't been through something that is hardly scientifically explicable, I would like to underline. So, yeah, I know, I love those kinds of experiences. So, it's quite normal, according to my crazy girlfriend, that you're having these kinds of experiences right now. We're in the period.
Yeah, thank you. I did not know about the documentary about Hockney, but I will look it up. And it's Yorkshire, the place in England where he does the road. I forget the title of the painting, but it's, yeah, it's in Yorkshire, where he grew up.
Hello, everyone. I was thinking here, you mentioned that words, of course, are not the thing, the reality of things. Many times I do like a practice of the words being kind of portal to the thing that they are pointing, like the finger pointing to the moon. Okay, moon, and really feel it. And so the word, not the word, but it's pointing, and we can feel it, really the experience of it. I don't know if you are understanding. Let's say courage, for instance. Okay, feel how it is, courage. Instead of just, oh, courage, and just be in the mind, just okay, feel it how it is. And to not to be so caught in the words, because in some sense it seems that everything that happens, like you and me were saying, is just, yeah, it's just what it is. And even works of art, it's just what it is. It can point, but it's that. But words, and we are so much caught in words, using it every day, every day, all the day. So incredible tool, at the same time, kept us up many times. So I tried to leave this directly, the thing that the words are pointing. Just this, whatever it is. You understanding me?
Yeah.
Please. Thank you.
Well, and we have like associations around words, so we have a way that we can say something in one language and it's said a different way in another language, and it's we're very attached to that word. Or, remember the talk in Lisbon was spring speaks for itself, whereas spring is this great word, but it's not actually the spring. Although in our minds it's associated with it. So yeah. Same thing with a painting though, it's reproducing an experience, but it does it is the there is also the experience that is an experience in itself.
Yeah, in the spirit of what you were saying, that being everything or being nobody, so we can be everybody, we can be, of course, we are not completely the spring as we see it or experience, but we can be the spring.
Yeah. Absolutely. We are it, but we don't always see that. But yeah. Claudia, who arrived late, so probably has no idea what we're talking about, but
No, I'm sorry I was here, but it's so hot. I'm here since the beginning, but I was do you want to know the truth? I have no clothes. It was so hot here. I was like, okay, so I was listening to you, but I was not I cannot put I couldn't put the video, but it's okay. I got something on to talk to you. but no, I was here since the beginning. Thank you, Amy, it was nice to hear the talk, and it really makes me think to. I mean, for me, it was very strong because, but I have too much to say, so I have to choose something to say tonight because of what you said about the encounter with. I don't remember the name of the guy you met in front of your house, but I wanted to say something about this, but I'll choose to say something else. I just wanted to share that
Because yesterday night, I really went through a very, very beautiful experience, and I wanted to share that with a bunch of 9 years old kids, because I had my guitar concert, you know, because I'm taking class in La Maison Populaire in Montreuil, and every year we have to give a concert. But normally, with my normal the teacher I had before, we were giving a concert in front of like a normal, I don't know, it was like different people. Sometimes I was inviting my friends, or so it was like very different people. But this time, with this new teacher, I really couldn't get along during the year. I was going to my class, and after every class, I was really so angry because I couldn't get in touch with his teacher. I never learned one thing from him during the whole year, and it's like for all my friends this year, it was like a huge subject, my new guitar teacher, you know. He was really driving me crazy, and I think it's a very, very he's a how do you say that, a bad teacher, even more than bad. He was a terrific teacher, like a really, really, really bad teacher. So, and even for my concert, he wanted to play with me, but every time he was playing with me, I said, you know, Philippe, I think it's better if I play alone, really. Please let me play alone. So that was the whole relationship with my teacher the whole year. And yesterday night, something happened, like really amazing, that because I saw like all his students, they were like 9 years old. Boys, I don't know why, there was maybe one girl, but there was just boy. They were 9 years old, so the concert was like maybe I don't know, I think there were like maybe 29 years old boys and Claudia. So it was so cute because they were just the parents of these boys, and so the public was the boys and the parents. And you know, okay, so that was nice because I was the last one, so I saw them play. So I don't know, these boys, they were giving everything, you know, for the little, maybe someday could play à la Claire Fontaine, you know, on the guitar. But they were so cute that when it arrives to me after these 20 boys, my playing was, for the first time, I was not performing at all. I was just playing the way they were playing. I was like just on the scene, and it's like if they were teaching me something, these little boys. So it was very nice, I think, the way I played, because it was like there was no. I was not expecting any. I think I was talking to them, to these 9 years old boys, and I was trying to touch their hearts. So it was very beautiful, and what was very nice is at the end of that, the little boys, they had a present for Philippe, all of them. They offered him a present to thank him for the year. I was the only one not having a present. I felt very bad. And they were all crying, all of them, because they were not going to see Philippe until September, you know. So it was like the perspective on my teacher was totally changed, you know. This man, he was just these little boys, they adore him, you know. I think, of course, I'm not a 9 years old boy, but I could. Maybe I think I was the only one not to get in touch with Philippe, and maybe I was the one who couldn't communicate with him. I think it was all my fault, you know. I didn't have a present. I was okay, so it was like the huge lesson of my life. And when I left, I went to say bye to him because he said, "So are you sure you're not coming back next year?" I said, No, Philippe, you know, I don't have the money for next year," which is, of course, a huge lie. But I saw that man so differently when I say bye, he was another man, you know. And I really was
so impressed by him, and so yeah, it really touched my, everybody touched my heart yesterday night. It was beautiful. So that's sometimes I could, maybe I should register for next year, but I'm not sure, but I was kind of almost maybe changing my mind. So it's like,
Thank you. Nice story of perspective, you know, that when we are hold to our perspective, we don't see the whole, the beauty. It doesn't mean we shouldn't acknowledge our perspective and what we feel and what we're experiencing, but it's like a beautiful story of opening when you like see the teacher through the eyes of these boys. And even see the boys differently than you would have otherwise. And then that changes who you are. That's a beautiful story. Nice. I'm especially touched because Claudia only like 2 days before or something had told me about this guy. And how, remember you told me you didn't like him and you had to have a different professor and all this story and everything, and it's just beautiful. Wow. You know, it reminds me of that story that I told these people, the university people yesterday, that I've talked about too, of the astronauts who were stuck in their spaceship because there was some technical problem. And so they were trapped in this spaceship. This was not so long ago, circling out there in vast space. They're trapped in this little spaceship in vast space, unlimited, you know, infinite. And that is like such a telling image for us because we are trapped in our little space that we've made for ourselves, this regime of I who's trapping us. When in fact, it's infinite, vast space. And we can have moments like that where we get out of our little ship and we realize something. Completely different. Our practice is about getting out of that trap that we're in, that ship. I'm sure I talked about this at some point. I don't remember when, but or maybe not. I don't know.
Roshi, who is that woman that wrote a book about this? Something like Barry is her first name or last name, where she goes to her kids and her husband are a mess and there's always crap all over the floor and everything. And she comes back from this, she has a revelation about this and comes back from, it's a true story, I mean, it's her story, comes back from this retreat or from some meeting with a teacher or something and realizes that it's the way she's looking at it. And so she looks at all the junk in the living room and says, "This is wonderful," or something. And then she proceeds to, I think she ends up leaving the guy in the end. Does this ring a bell at all? I read this. No. Well, I'll try
I
to
don't
find
know
the
it.
reference.
No, I don't know
It's
of it.
Barry or something. And she ended up being a teacher based on this same sort of thing. All of a sudden, the gunky thing you don't like is fine. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yep, that's our story too. Absolutely. But in the story you tell, Debbie, so she, it's not like she says, oh, this is okay. I'm going to live like this the rest of my life. She leaves the guy, but she apparently, but she's able to see things as they are and then make a choice, you know, probably. I don't know.
And the separation was quite peaceful. I'll find the references. References are very interesting because she goes on to sort of codify this practice of take what you know, something you really don't like, and do what Claudia, you know, what happened to Claudia. See it as its opposite sort of thing. I'll look it up.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, Anna.
Well, I want to thank you for your talk, Hoshi. And I'm always very thankful for your talks, but I'm also very amazed how can you, in a short time, touch so different aspects of life and subjects. And I learn a lot, and thank you very much for that. And thank you, everybody, for sharing. And I'm sorry if I don't. Anyway, I want also to ask you, Hoshi, if you have already re-read all the Lydia George book, because I've reread the book last week, and I'm so grateful I've reread the book. It is a great book. Have you finished the
Yes, and I am so grateful that you told me about the book. You so beautiful, such
it
a
is
wonderful book. Yeah.
it's called for the For the for you, it's called how do you say, Misericordia?
Yeah, that it's the same word, Misericordia.
Misericordia, Lydia George. It's great book, very great book, big book, like 400 and something pages. But we read it like this, you know, we cannot stop.
Yeah. In French, it's how many pages? But yeah, it's 450 in French. Yeah.
What is the name, Roshi? What is the name of the writer? Sorry. Lydia.
Yeah, George, Misericordia. And it won, this is a French translation, and it won the Medici Prize in France, which is one of the big literary prizes for foreign novel, for foreign book, in 2023. And many of her books have been published by this publisher in France. So I'm planning to read some others too, but I just finished this a few days ago. I read it kind of slowly. I enjoyed it, and I don't think I would have finished it in a week, but it's really beautiful. Yeah.
Well, I couldn't stop, really.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Claudia, did you have your hand up when Anna was speaking, or no?
No, it's too late. No, I just okay. I'm going because you okay. I'm going to say something else. I'm so happy because I was I had to with my students like dancers and the directors in Le CNSM. We had to watch like 28 video dance, and we have to choose the best one, and it was a Portuguese one. It was a Portuguese video dance, and it was the best one, the best film of all. And I'm so it's so bad because I cannot share because I don't know how to get that film. But if I try to get it and maybe to share it with you because it's like so beautiful, it's like a piece of art, and I will try to get it and to share it with you later when it's out. But I was so proud. I was like, yes.
Nice, thank you. Well, we're almost out of time. If someone wants to say something, they can, but otherwise, I guess we stop here. Okay. Someone will need to stop the recording. I guess Lisa's not there, Tiago. Okay. Yeah.